Oh, welcome to another episode of the Deeper the Dope podcast. I have an amazing guest. I'm super excited. Portia Lauder on the call today. Portia, welcome to the episode, or welcome to the
Thank you, Bennett. It's good to be here.
podcast. Portia, can we start with just a minute or two of your background? And I know we briefly met, and I'm really excited to get to know you on the show. But give us the footnotes.
I live in Utah. I'm 52 years old. I was a photographer for years and then a real estate investor, and definitely know what it's like to get caught up in more money, more this, more that, more excitement, more kids. I got a lot of kids too.
Okay.
I got to the point where really my integrity was slipping and my peace and clarity and understanding of what was important. And that led to a prison sentence for me. I got involved in some illegal real estate deals, spent 4.5, 5 years away from my family, close to 5 years between Dublin, California. It was federal prison, and was in California for a year and then in Minnesota for 3 years and then back in California before I got back to Utah. I would say that one of the hardest things that I've ever experienced. I was, my case was on the 10 o'clock news. It just felt like death, truly felt like death. And I just remember looking at my family and wondering how I could have gotten so lost, how I could have gotten so confused about what really mattered. And I ended up getting 8 weeks before I had to self-surrender in prison to say goodbye to my family. And that was a life-changing experience to see the world so differently. And then we'll talk more about that journey and kind of what came from it. I've been home now for almost 5 years and my life is beautiful. I've had so many opportunities I never would have thought I would have, but it was through walking through the pain and coming to really own my story of my life that the outcome became what it is. So yeah, that's a little bit about
There's
it.
a lot to unpack there in that 2 minute intro. So if I got the timelines correct, it was about 10 years ago because you served for 5 years and it's been 5 years since then. And then
Yes.
you mentioned some kids. How many kids do you have?
Okay, so I have 6 children total. I started young and I placed a child for adoption. We won't even go through all my younger years because there's a lot. My younger years were pretty difficult. And I think that added to my stubbornness. I was a single mother and kind of fought my way out of that before I ever started my photography company. And so when I transitioned from photography to real estate, I'd had to fight my way through life. So it was hard for me to imagine that I could fail and that I couldn't just keep fighting and fight my way through it. I had 2 children when I married my husband. We've been married for 27 years. He stuck by me through all that. And then we had 3 children together and I placed one for adoption. So our family combined is 6 and we've now all connected, but I had 3 young children when I went to prison and my older 2 were married and then a son that, had been adopted. So yeah.
And I want to unpack also that the 8 weeks leading up that you had with your family before you had to say goodbye for 5 years. When it was, so you ended up serving for 5 years. Was that the expected time, or is it a little bit longer, shorter? How did that plan out?
So it's interesting that you ask. I recently, when you go to federal prison, well, before you go to federal prison, you get to sit in the federal courthouse. And in Utah, that's in Salt Lake City. And I remember thinking it was a pretty daunting place, that big kind of, it almost looks like a great big jail cell. It's just like a really big cement building. I was recently asked to go back there. I went back there with the news and recorded what it's been like since prison. But that day that I was sentenced, I stood in the front of the courtroom and they said the United States of America versus Portia Lauder. And I stood there with my children and my husband behind me. And it was probably the loneliest day of my life, like that feeling of complete devastation. I was facing 0 to 7 years. The judge sentenced me to 7. I probably deserved it because I had been so stubborn and really made things a lot worse by just not owning where I was. When the judge gave me the 8 weeks, he didn't intend to. He was like, I'm sending her to prison. He was just really frustrated with me. My husband got up and he just said, please give her time to say goodbye to her children, which was pretty tender for me to have this man that I had drugged through all this stand there and, you know, plead with the judge on my behalf. And so the judge did agree to the 8 weeks. I remember Chad and I left the courthouse. The news was there, of course. And we asked our older children to take our younger children home. And then we just started to drive. And it was surreal for me. I remember I couldn't speak for probably over an hour. My husband kept saying, are you okay? How can I support you? What can I do? And everything just shifted for me that day. I looked around and wondered why the world was still moving, why people still thought everything was okay, because it wasn't, you know. But the bigger feeling for me was, how could I have thought money was so important? How could I have gotten caught up in something that really just the shift for me of those simple things, those moments with my children, driving my children to school. I remember going home that night and watching my children sleep and just wondering how I could have missed the beauty of my life. I had truly missed so much. And chasing, you know, it was, I wanted to make more money to provide more security so I'd have more time with my children, but I always had the time with my children. You know, it was there. It was like such a weird, and it became so clear in an instant for me that I had missed it. You know, I had missed it. And so the last day that I, you know, one of the things I did right was that I reached out to my community and I got very open because I had nothing left to lose. I figured out I can either say something or I can let things be said by the news. Like, I might as well just say it. And I reached out on social media platforms and I asked people to love and support my family. I said, I've made these mistakes. I'm going to have to go to prison. I didn't expect it to be as long as it is. It's been a long and difficult journey and it's about to get harder, but my little ones need your support. And I reached out to the schools that my kids were involved with, our neighbors and community really encircled our family. And I have some amazing friends that like took my family to Lake Powell and, you know, made sure the kids got to, like, supported Chad, my husband.
Yeah.
And then 8 weeks later, my mother came over. I remember that day. And she turned away because it was too painful for her to watch me say goodbye to my children. She said, I'll be in the car. And I just told each of them how much I loved them. And I remember I had two teenagers. My son was 14 and he was just trying to be so strong and brave. I promise I'll help mom. It will be okay. And just the absolute devastating pain that I felt to say goodbye. It was so painful. And Chad and I drove 14 hours because, again, in Utah, the closest federal prison at that time was Dublin, California, which is Oakland. It's, it's a little different than Utah. And yeah. And I walked into a federal prison and nobody said, hey, we're so glad to see you. Welcome. You know, and it was devastating. It was super painful for me. Yeah.
So leading up to it, you mentioned at the very beginning, like, you saw your integrity slipping. When did you realize it? Was it kind of like, I'm going to do this one, and then kind of, you know, kind of that slippery slope and you get caught? Or is it like when you actually got caught, you're like looking back like, crap, I shouldn't have been doing that?
Yeah, I made so many excuses. And man, have I learned that power lies in accountability and just responsibility. But the way that it went down for me was that I like to hustle. So like, I'm always moving. And my photography business was probably, I was shooting about 200 weddings a year. So I had employees and was just traveling. Mm-hmm. I was really busy. I had two young ones, older kids. I had a nanny helping with kids. My husband was working. I wanted him to quit his job and stay home with the kids. And when I got involved in real estate in the beginning, it was just buying and flipping lots. It was like, you know, it just made sense because the market was moving so fast. And then equity deals came, which is buy a house for $1 million, take a HELOC or a home equity line of credit for $250,000, borrow the money, invest it in something else. And honestly, they were advertising, like they were, you know, that was a thing and it was happening across the country. And those were all reasons that I had a really hard time owning my piece in that, because I was like, everyone's doing it. The banks are doing it.
Yeah.
The whole country's crooked then, you know. But I clearly remember a couple of investors showing me this. It was like a $5 million house. And they were, well, it appraised for $5 million, but I could pick it up for $2.5 million. And they were saying I could borrow $1 million. None of that makes any sense, right? Like, you buy a house, somebody gives you $1 million, and they were trying to describe it to me as arbitrage. This is how the banks do it. They borrow cheap, they lend it for more, they make money, you make the cut in the middle. And I remember telling my husband I would never get involved in that. And then all of a sudden I did. I don't know how to explain it. Just like I knew, I felt it, and I did it anyway. And the challenge with that is that when you're kind of, when you can feel it and you know it and you keep going, then pretty soon you don't feel it anymore. And that's what happened to me. I didn't anymore. Everything shifted for me. You know, I got more.
Meaning you got used to it, right? I mean, and it's no longer risky. You're just like, oh, everybody's doing it.
Yep.
Go with the flow, kind of safe, which I mean, that is just human nature, whether it's something good that you're doing, a good habit or a bad habit, either way, your body does go back to that homeostasis. Like, okay, this is our life now. Which brings me to another question on the challenge. And you can speak to any challenge, the federal prison challenge, any other challenge, putting a child up for adoption challenge. Looking back at how hard you thought any one of those challenges would be compared to how hard it actually was once you kind of got used to it. Can you speak to me about that?
Well, I don't think you, at least me personally, I never know how hard things are going to be until I do them. Like, I never know, you know, my strength.
And really what I'm asking, like, I'm going to federal prison for 5 years. It's going to be the worst thing ever. And then after 3 years in, you're like, oh yeah, I'm kind of used to it. That's kind of what I was, where the question's coming from.
That didn't happen for me. Like, and I get kind of where you're going. And I think in some cases that's true. But for me, what I found in prison was that people are stuck. It's really easy to get stuck. And I consider stuck being denial. So the fact is I had imprisoned myself and my integrity, I'd made choices that kind of boxed me in before I even went to prison. And the freedom would have lied in ownership. Like if I could have said, yep, I did this. And I think that's always where it lies when you start down a path, wherever you are, if you can find that ownership, that's solid for you to stand on that place. For example, the FBI shows up and, you know, starts to question me. And I made lots of excuses and told them they should take a lie detector test. Now, don't ever do that. Like, that's the worst thing you can do. Now, what would have been really smart, and I had lots of time to think about it, would have been, I made a mistake. How can I make it right? Like that sentence changes the whole game. After 2.5 years of struggling and suffering and watching my children grow up without me, there were things about it that I got used to and comfortable with. In some ways, the disconnect from social media, the disconnect from worry. I worked a lot harder out here than I had to in prison. I read lots of books. Like there were things about it that were comforting that I got used to for sure. I got used to the environment. I actually even thrived in the environment. You know, I started writing curriculum for classes, connecting with other women. I found a lot of beauty in the experience, but the devastation and the pain of the choices that I made, I had two choices. One was I could deny them and blame everybody else, especially the government, right? But if I do that, I'm waiting for them to come apologize if I'm ever going to be free. And that's never going to happen. The other option for me is I did this. This was me 100%. I made this choice. And I go to my children and my community and I take ownership. And I even reach out to law enforcement and say, I'm sorry for the way I dealt with that. That was me. And when I did that, that was when my soul opened up. I was given power back into my life to recreate something new. And that's when life got really good for me in prison because I started becoming a creator instead of a victim. So.
Yeah, I just got off the call with, we're raising capital at Dirty Dough. There's always good parts of the business that you want to pitch. And then typically, you know, you're like, I want to shy away from the bad side. I'm like, no, I lead with the bad side. And it's just such a different approach. Like you lead and say, hey, we've opened up 70 stores, but we've had to close some because I used to say because we as a company, but I'm like, because me as an individual, like I approved some franchisees that maybe were undercapitalized or they weren't as invested or the locations. And then there's no more like, they don't kick me while I'm down. You know, they're like, okay, you realize that. And now there's a turning point, which happens in every business. And it is very, very freeing. Now, I'm not even trying to say that my experience was nearly the same as yours, but just the relationship of, you can't argue with somebody who admits they're wrong, right?
It's the principle.
There's no conversation that.
I remember my first posts, because I was blogging from prison when I was in prison, but when I got out, I remember writing this post saying, I spent, you know, almost 5 years in federal prison and I deserve to be there. And everybody's like, what did she just say? Like, nobody says that because I broke the law. You know, everybody's like, why didn't she just make a bunch of excuses? I got done dirty, you know, because that is really how the world works. And I got to the point where you couldn't ask me, like, I remember an officer saying, hey, Lauder, why didn't you do this and this and this? And I said, because I didn't want to. And he turns around and looks at me like, you didn't just make a bunch of excuses. I go, I just didn't feel like doing it. And I did, you know, ownership is where power lies. And I think when you walk into a room, whether the deal comes through for you or not, if you own where you are, you walk out empowered. That's
exactly. As soon as it's, oh, I couldn't do X, Y, Z because of these external circumstances, then how are you going to change it if it wasn't your fault? But if you can pin it back on yourself, for me, it comes back to a book by Jocko Willink called Extreme Ownership that was very impactful in my life. And it's like, no matter what happens, even if it's somebody else's fault, it was your fault for not explaining. And maybe you did explain and you put it in writing, but you didn't triple verify, you know? And then it's just such a mentality shift. I'm like, okay, no, this is on me, you know, like I do have power. So I think that's awesome. And it does lead into a question. I was going to ask what the most beneficial, empowering, maybe stable belief that you have had that's helped you through the situation. Is it that kind of extreme ownership, or is there something else that is in addition to that?
I think it's a combination of like a big shift. Ownership was a shift for me, but also, and it kind of goes with it, I get to decide the ending. Like, it is 100% within my control to decide how things end. It's a really good place to practice that because there's so many things you don't control in prison, but there's a lot of things you do. And there are things that you don't realize you do. Like you control your response to what people say, your thoughts. I'm very careful with my thoughts, right? Like I consider the outcome I want. I got halfway through prison and realized like I had failed on such a level for me, like my failure. I felt like my whole life was a disaster. Like financially, I failed. Because I left my family in bad shape financially. I failed my children. I failed my marriage. I failed my community. It was like, who am I? I just felt so deeply broken, right? And to get to a place where I realized the only thing left for me is an amazing ending. I got to get it. Like, I got to have an amazing ending. Because if you have an amazing ending, you get to decide. You're the one that writes the story. Like, I met some people that had extreme tragedy in prison. And I would say your life will either be completely tragic or a massive triumph because the ending will determine the whole thing. And so, I mean, that comes through ownership. But when I got the vision that an amazing ending would give meaning to the whole experience, that was very empowering for me.
So. When did that happen and what triggered that? And if you can kind of speak in terms to, you're talking to another Porsche that just got sentenced with, you know, something similar, or they're in the middle of it. Again, what time did that realization come and what were the leading, the steps that led up to that?
You know, I think I would say to anybody, I can't imagine how difficult what you're facing is. I can't imagine the beauty that could come from that and the difficulties that you might be facing. I think that what I have learned is there is so much beauty on the other side of the pain, and the pain is a foundation to build a new life. And whether it is a divorce, a business, you know, that you've lost and you're, you know, you can't see it yet. I've lived long enough now to see outcomes so much different than what I thought, having gone through some tragic experiences, some what seemed like beautiful experiences that didn't end the way I thought, you know, just like, if you never give up, there is truly something on the other side of this that's more grand than you can imagine. I felt accountable to myself and everybody. The other thing is that I truly believed, and I don't know why I believed it. A lot of people don't. No one in prison did. The world was cheering me on. I believed that everybody wanted me to succeed. And I used to stand there in groups in prison and go, you guys, people want us to succeed. And they're like, nobody likes us. Nobody wants us to succeed. I'm like, yes, the world is cheering us on. Now, what's your alternative? Everybody wants you. Like, I came home believing everyone was excited that I got home from prison and that my life meant, you know, mattered and meant something. And it truly, I've had the world respond accordingly. Like I've had so many opportunities to share that experience and connect and do work that I never would have imagined, because I believed, even in my darkest moments, I couldn't quit because the world was cheering me on. So
I love that. That's a great mentality. And like the truth is, like me looking at people, even if I know them or I don't know them, somebody in prison, as a member of society, do I want them to be there? No, like I am cheering for them to make the changes and get out of society, because that is better for everybody. Like, that's cool that you could see that, because that is something that maybe we're not always thinking. Now, the flip side is, well, if other people are worse than me, it makes me feel better. But it just kind of depends, I guess, on that mentality. But I do believe that the majority of the people are cheering you on. So that's awesome. Was there anything that led to that belief, or where did that come from? Because that is very unique.
Yeah, that is a unique belief. And I don't know if it was just something that, you know, how you practice it for a period of time. Like as a single mother, mm-hmm. I believed it as a business owner when things were going difficult. I think it came from a place of solution based for me. Like what's my alternative? You know, if I think people want me to fail, then what good is that going to do me? So I just made a very conscious choice to believe it and not allow my thoughts to go anywhere else, because I wasn't going to give power to the rest, you know, to anything else. Like I believe what you focus on grows. And you know, I had a unique upbringing. My parents were very non-traditional. They were really out of the box thinkers. My parents were both entrepreneurs, and they never let anyone tell them, like, you have to do it this way. We weren't follow the crowd people. And so I was grateful for that, that people could say that's what led me to prison, because I'm an out of the box thinker, you know, and I figured I didn't have to, you know, I could break the law and get away with it. But I don't think so. My parents were law abiding people. I've actually written books about this stuff, you know, now that I'm home,
yeah.
But, you know, at that, I feel like it served me so well when I got to a place that I realized I don't have to follow the crowd on this. If people don't like people in prison and think that they're, you know, a menace, that's, I don't have to believe that. I don't have to live that way. I can choose what I think and I can act accordingly. And that's been a good thing for me. Yeah. So I think I always had it.
So there was a study that tracked lottery winners and paraplegics. And I think it was 18 months after winning the lottery or having the accident that you lose control of your limbs. And both of them returned almost to their base levels of happiness and well-being again about 18 months later. So whether you have a complete high, your body and the human, you know, ability to reach homeostasis comes back, whether it's good or bad. And I wanted to know if that was similar in your life experience, whether it's the highs of making a lot of money or the lows of going to federal prison.
I was on kind of this rush high as I was investing in real estate, and the crash and burn was extreme and intense when I was in prison, because it was such a complete shift. Go, 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 mm-hmm. to staying there all day long. So it would be hard for me to compare, but I will tell you this. My life is probably 50 to 100 times, I mean, that's a big range, better than it was ever before. Like, this is the very best time of my life. I would think it would be different for the lottery winner if they recognize at some point, this is my opportunity. I have this unique space to make the very most of it. And I did that. Like, I realized while I was in prison, this might be the most important thing I'll ever do. I read sometimes 15 to 18 hours a day. I started writing classes and teaching classes. I really made so many shifts and did the internal work that I had waited my whole life to do, because I started so young having kids. I mean, I was a reader and I was a goer, but I found myself. I did a lot of meditation, a lot of walking, a lot of mental health, healthy things. And so some people say that I make prison sound charming. It's definitely not charming. But because I was so determined to have something, and I realized there was nothing external. There was no company, no hustle, no nothing. I wasn't going to leave with an accomplishment that was external. But what the work mm-hmm. I did was internal, and it would build the rest of my life. So where the things I appreciate now, the way I see the world has shifted. I don't know that would be the same for somebody that was handed money, or that I have a friend that had that is a paraplegic, and he says that he is in the best part of his life, but it happened young to him. So he doesn't know for sure if, you know, but yeah. I feel like, for me, And that's why I get the opportunity to share my story quite a bit, because it's unusual. My experience is unusual, but it's absolutely available in any tragic or any shift in life that you can have a completely different view. So I don't know that, I mean, I think you're probably right. I saw a lot of people go to prison that I loved them and but I think you're probably right about that in general. But for me, it's different because I really took advantage of that time and made it into something that has changed my entire life. So.
Yeah. And that's really what I was getting at. You know, you experience the highs and the lows, but no matter how high or how low, the body's ability to adapt to that circumstance is pretty incredible. And so, you know, on the low, that's great because it's like, I thought this was going to be the worst thing ever, but I can get used to it relatively quickly in a matter of weeks, months, years. And then it gets us in trouble on the other side, because we think we're going to experience this huge high and we make $1 million or we do whatever we do. And it's just not as fulfilling as what we thought, which leads us to want, you know, more, 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 more. And you mentioned something about that. You know, I wanted more. And I've said this 1,000 times, like my personal experience, I had a solar company, wife, 3 kids. And I was just like, I'm just going to work because they want me to work because they want more money. Because money equals vacation time equals time with my family, and time with my family equals happiness. I didn't realize that I could be with them every single day, you know?
Yeah.
So, kind of speak to me about that. And like, how does your definition of success or fulfillment compare to when you were doing real estate and in the heat of it, the height of, you know, making the most money that you've ever made versus what that means to you now?
Yeah. So I love what you're talking about, and I call it living in the middle. And I'm really and I own that. I'm like, when something's amazing, I'm like, I'm right in the middle. When things are tragic, I'm right in the middle, because I've learned the value of the middle, right? And I would say my whole view of what mattered shifted. And this is going to happen to everyone as they prepare to die. But prison was like a death for me, and so I got a little preview of death. What really mattered when I got to prison wasn't $1 that I made, no accomplishments, none of that stuff. What I missed were those simple things, driving my kids to school, the moments and the beauty of life. And so I was very deliberate when I came home about what I engaged in. And I've been, I had a list, I had a vision, a mission, a purpose, and I was careful. I value my time more than I ever did before I went to prison. Like, I am so careful with my time and the way I use it. And that might mean that I sit in the sun for an hour to meditate, and that time is more valuable than making $10,000 tomorrow, right? Like, because I need that, because I know what brings me real joy. And so I think the key to that is being very, very deliberate, but it's an internal journey for sure to get to that place where you recognize that, the external things, there will never be enough of it ever. It is an internal journey. It's finding that peace within yourself and that joy within yourself. And I have it. And because I had it, I valued it so much that it almost scared me to come back out here. I was like, this is valuable. What I have, what I've gained here means something. And I think a lot of people get out of prison and they're like, let's go party. Not me. I got out of prison. I was like, I'm going to do everything the exact same I've been doing it. You know, my life's going to be small, and I'm going to be very careful and deliberate. It's interesting that I went to prison and I got to a place where I valued myself more than I ever had. I valued my time more than I ever had, which is what most people think is the opposite, but that's what it became for me. So.
Yeah. Such a beautiful, you know, like silver lining to look back and say, okay, well, these were all of the good things. Now there's, I think it's a Jack Johnson song of the, you never know what you got till it's gone, you know,
right.
Or whoever sings it. I don't know who it is. Maybe it's not Jack Johnson. But there is a technique that can be used that can assist you in that without actually having to lose it. And it's negative visualization. And, you know, you're going into a meditation of all the things that you're grateful for, and then deeply imagining that you lose those. So then when you come out of it, you know, it's not going to be as intense as actually losing it and going to federal prison, but there are different techniques in order to, I guess, help you realize those things before you lose them. Anyways, negative visualization,
right on.
Great technique. It's been amazing having you. Thank you so much for being open, honest, vulnerable about your experience. Tell us a little bit more about your books, what you're doing right now, and then also where our guests can contact you.
Yeah. So I work in the mental health field. I am a coach, and I go work with underprivileged kids. I go to prisons and speak, and I also do a lot for the LDS Church. I go to the MTC every week and speak to new missionaries coming in. So I do a lot of service work. I wrote my first book, Living Louder, about a year after I got out of prison. And it was basically just my heart was full and I had been blogging. So I had all these experiences. My first, I was excited that I could get it into prisons. I had a connection to content providers. And so I was able to get it on tablets across the country. I released it on Amazon and people buy it and that's great, but it's a different view. It's like that whole journey. And right. I get letters every day from people in prison. They love it. And then I recently wrote my second book. I just published it in April, and that's titled Born to be Brave. It's super easy to find either of them. They're on Amazon. Also, I have a website, PortiaLouder.com, and I do a lot on social media. So yeah, reach out. And you'd be surprised how many people know somebody that's going through this or struggling. Mm-hmm. And I'm really good at connecting and being willing to support people in those situations. So yeah, definitely reach out.
Hey. Well, I appreciate that offer. We'll include all of that in the show notes. But thank you again.